Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I'm your host, Sim Terwilliger, and I'm joined today by Megan McGuire.
Woo, woo. You got the ladies again today.
I am so excited for today. I know this isn't going to air tomorrow, but tomorrow is Valentine's Day. And so in honor of that, we're going to be talking all things money and relationships. I love love. And so this is one of my favorite topics. And Megan, I know for you too. I know you love love. You are actually a fan of The Bachelor. You're part of Bachelor Nation. Is that right?
I do feel like I'm somewhat part of Bachelor Nation. One, I am a watcher. I have not started the newest season yet, but I did watch Golden Bachelor and it was so nice, so sweet. It was like a really refreshing take on Bachelor, I think. Is that what you thought too?
I thought it was a lot healthier. It was nice to see how these women handled conflicts because you can't have a show like this without the drama. And that's why we watch. We're here for it. I thought it was a great take on it. And to see a lot of these women lean into aging gracefully and you don't have to be like a hot young thing. To have love. Again, love, love.
We had some Georgia representation there. There was somebody from south of Atlanta, I think. So pretty cool season. But yeah, I actually interviewed Danielle Maltby maybe a year and a half ago. She is a practicing PA, I believe. She has her own podcast and I somehow got picked to be on that podcast. And so I went on there to talk about student loans. It was so fun, but what I was kicking myself for is I didn't realize it was her at first. Like, it just nowhere in my mind where I was like, I'm going to have a bachelor like experience, somewhat experience, while talking about student loans. It just like the two wires weren't crossing for me. So after I got off, I was like, she looks so familiar. Her name is so familiar. So I Googled her and I was like, oh my gosh.
Fangirl after the fact. Yeah, that's probably a good thing though, because you might have not been able to do the interview as well.
It probably was a good thing for sure. I would have been too nervous. But she's very sweet. Very sweet.
Awesome. So today we're going to be talking all things money and relationships. Megan, you got married somewhat recently, right?
I did. So I used to be a Landris. Now I'm a McGuire. I got married in end of 2020. What year? 2022. And we're still newish, but you have a larger anniversary coming up soon, right? Your 9th anniversary.
I do. My husband and I are about to celebrate our 9th wedding anniversary. We got married very young. I was just 23 years old. I kind of like to joke, like I made a major life decision before my prefrontal cortex was fully formed at 25. And so I, for one, am super grateful that it has worked out because I know that is not the case for everyone who gets married very young.
Aw, and Paul is awesome. He is the coolest, smartest guy. He can play chess with like 3 different people at the same time and know where he's at on the board mentally. Like if that's not like impressive, I don't know what is.
I won't say that that's what attracted me to him, but I do appreciate he's very cerebral. And that was something I was looking for in my partner. Megan, you have a story about what attracted you to Kelly, though.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. So I met Kelly on the Bumble machine. That's a story for another day. But what really attracted me to Kelly initially was when we first met, he had actually just left his job. He had planned on leaving his job to go start his own company. And he did not anticipate meeting me. That was the joke. It's like, if he had met me like a week before, he probably wouldn't have quit his job. That's what he tells people. As soon as we met, he said, hey, I just want to let you know I'm unemployed. And the joke was, I was also unemployed at the time because I had just left my first firm. So I was like, oh, no way, me too. So the running joke for some of my friends was, you know, who's going to pick up the tab then if y'all are both unemployed? But to get to the point, what really attracted me to Kelly was that he had financially prepared to be out of work for a year because he had to wait out a non-compete to be able to go start his firm. He does staffing and he had a 1-year non-compete. He told me that he had planned on, you know, being out of work for a year. So he kind of had a year of sabbatical time and he had saved up to be able to support himself for that year. And me being in finance, I was like, wow, that's really attractive. A lot of people don't think about that. Like, so it's hard to get some people to have like 3 months of emergency savings, but this guy had like a year of savings ready for, he was going to, of course, spend it on his living for the year. But I just thought that was so cool. I was like, that's, you're my kind of guy.
You're like, babe, your financial acumen is so hot.
Right.
Oh my gosh, that sounds like a match made in heaven. That's great. So Let's actually lean into that a little bit. So Kelly had prepared for the sabbatical, and you know, there's a lot of people who are dating and maybe they're not sure about getting married, but they're like in a serious long-term commitment. What are some things that you think people can do to start to prepare for that?
I think there's a lot of proactive things you can do to prepare for marriage. Money is definitely, definitely, definitely something you should talk about before you get married. You know, you might be thinking, oh yeah, I'll talk about my debt. I'll talk about my student loans. I'll talk about how much I make. That's one thing. But I also think your relationship with money should be discussed. How do you spend your money on the weekend? Like, what's important to you? Is it important to you to do annual vacations? Or, you know, do you like shopping sprees when you get a pay raise? You know, what are the things that are your vices when it comes to spending? What are some of your struggles with money? That's something you should talk about too, because I think those things are certainly going to, you know, rear their head later on in life. At some point, if you do have a successful relationship, you get married, at some point you're going to be having these conversations, and it's better to have it beforehand to know what page you guys are on, because you guys might be in different books, right? If you don't have these conversations before marriage. But is that what you think too?
Yeah, I think if you guys will allow me to use this expression, but I think it's time to get freaky in the sheets. And by that, I mean your spreadsheets. So what I think you guys need to do, and I know it's so corny, getting organized is so important for anybody, right? Even if you're not like in a relationship, just like for yourself. So I think it's a good idea to make a list, know what you owe, know what you have. So make a list of everything you have, right? We call them your assets, you know, your bank accounts, your investments. What do you have? Where are they? Do you have any beneficiaries listed on them? This is actually a great thing to do ahead of time too, because we'll talk about this in a little bit later. But when you do estate planning, your estate planning attorney is going to ask for this anyway. So do it ahead of time. Have your partner do the same thing, and then swap sheets and go over everything. Just kind of look at, this is the situation. And a lot of people are embarrassed to talk about finances. They find that to be more intimate than other forms of intimacy sometimes, because it's like, and I joke about this. I have a client who every time we meet, he says, you know, you're going to see me financially naked. And it's an embarrassing topic for a lot of people, especially when we talk about debt, student loan debt, what you borrowed for school. A lot of people don't want to talk about that until they're already married. And that can be a source of conflict, because it could be like, well, why didn't you tell me about this? Or I didn't know how bad it was. So getting everything out in the open ahead of time can be super helpful.
Mm-hmm. My sister likes to joke, her husband told her on their very first date how much student loan debt he had. And he engineering. So engineers don't have a ton, because they just, a lot of times it, you can be an engineer for certain specialties with a bachelor degree. So there's not a lot of those graduate loans that come with being an engineer. She tells me that that was pretty attractive to her too. So we the Landris sisters have a theme. Like, we like responsible men, financially responsible men, apparently. But I think starting the conversation, now this does not have to be a first date kind of thing. I said my sister was told on her first date by her now husband, it doesn't have to be a first date kind of thing. It just doesn't need to be like at the altar or after the altar, you know, it needs to be before then. And these are very important, crucial conversations, because money is in your day to day. Your every single day has to do with something financial. You're either making a purchase, putting money away to save, paying rent. Like, money is in your day to day. So why not talk about it? I think that's important.
Yeah. And so you were kind of talking earlier about, you know, what is your money psychology? Are you a saver? Are you a spender? Sometimes it's good just to kind of take stock of where you are, like get some data. And so figure out, well, what are you spending your money on? Where is it going? And then you can, from there, build a cash flow plan intentionally with your partner. But you can't really do that if you don't know, hey, what does it look like at the end of the month? Like, how much money maybe on average do I have left over to do other things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because as you grow together as a couple, you're going to have a lot of similar goals. So you have, you know, a similar goal to be saving for or preparing for, and getting organized and knowing like how you guys can work together to get there will help you get there a lot faster. For sure. Especially if you both are looking at the same target, walking in the same direction together. So,
and you know, we're student loan planners. So this does relate to your student loans, because when you have two people who are married and you're filing your taxes jointly and you both have federal student loans, that impacts how they calculate your payment depending on what payment plan you're on. So knowing ahead of time, you guys can start to finagle like AGI, right? Maybe we should file separately, or maybe we need to prioritize saving more in our 401ks. So you can start to strategize even before you get married. A lot of people ask me, you know, as someone who got married young, and I do have a long and very healthy relationship, you know, how did we manage that? It was not always easy. The pandemic, like for a lot of other couples, was very difficult for us just because, one, we're stuck together in a way that we weren't before. So we were seeing a lot of each other. We had a lot of pregnancy losses. So it was just a lot of things. And, you know, we were kind of thinking about maybe doing like marriage counseling. And so as you go through the process of looking for a therapist, some of them advertise, we are trained in the Gottman method. And I'm like, well, what's the Gottman method? Some of you may know this. It's after Dr. John Gottman, and he wrote that really famous book, The Seven Principles of Marriage. I have recommended it to some of my clients and some of you listening. I think it's a really excellent resource and starting point. If you don't feel like going to a therapist, you find it overwhelming, you can just go to the OG himself. So pick up this book. He has seven different principles of marriage. And one of them, I think this is principle number seven, kind of just to spoil the book, is create shared meaning. And that can mean a lot of different things, but to kind of bring it back to your finances, part of creating shared meaning can be making financial goals together. And not everything is related to finances, right? Like shared meaning can be like, we want kids, we want to retire in this place, right? And of course, finances will play into that. But create shared meaning is about having meaningful experiences together. And so you don't want money to kind of hold you back in that life planning with your partner. The truth of the matter, though, is that even though I am a big believer in like fighting for your relationship, if it's a healthy one, if you've been married for a long time, it's not for everyone. There may be cases where it totally makes sense to decouple. But what I like to say is, you know, before you do that, nurture your relationship, because divorce is expensive, right? When you kind of go through all of the attorneys, assuming it's not an amicable one, and even if it is amicable, it can still be expensive. But, you know, you have the lawyer fees, it can drag on, you have potential splitting of assets, and that kind of changes depending on how long you've been married and what are the rules in your state. Megan and I were looking at some interesting divorce statistics that Forbes just put out for 2024. Megan, what stood out to you?
Oh my gosh. Well, there was a lot of detail. We'll tag this article in the notes of the podcast and on the YouTube video. It's a very long and thorough article if you take a look at it. And it's updated, I guess, as far as 2024. They have some statistics from 2021 all the way up to this, coming up to this year. I think what really stood out to me was maybe the top reasons for divorce. I think that's very fascinating to me, like why people cite that they do decide to part ways. The top reason was lack of commitment, which I think that could mean different things to different people. Next in line was extramarital affairs. And, you know, next from that was too much conflict and arguing. So it's not actually money that's the top choice. My initial thought, if I was just looking at this blindly, I was going to think that financial problems would probably be number one. But I think lack of commitment and some other things, you know, getting married too young, that was like your insecurity, Sim, initially.
I know.
Like that's like actually higher.
Yeah. A lot of my friends got married young too. And like, I would say at least half of them are already divorced. And wow. So I see that and I'm just like, I'm like, Paul, are we next? And he looks at me like, Sim, are you crazy?
Aw. Financial problems wasn't as high as I thought it was going to be. So that might be good. You know, who knows how great this data is, though. It is a Forbes article, but, you know, I've never personally been interviewed for one of these statistical articles. So I don't know who they're interviewing, right?
But yeah, lack of commitment came in at a whopping 75%. That was really shocking. Financial problems does make the cut, though. It's still over a third. Mm-hmm. For people, as far as reasons for divorce, it was at 37%. So still up there, not number one, still a big reason though. And so we kind of, at least with our little piece of the pie, like to help people with their financial issues and kind of avoid that. One thing to watch out for is alimony. I know some people personally who wanted an amicable divorce, and so they did not want to ask for as much alimony as they were entitled to. I don't know if this was because I'm a financial planner or just like a good friend, but I was like, no, you should absolutely ask for as much alimony as you're eligible for. And there's several reasons for that. And if this is something that applies to you, part of it is because a lot of these people in the situation, you're like a stay-at-home parent or for one reason or another, you were not working as much or bringing in as much of an income. So you sacrificed your earning potential, your potential, you know, social security history to take care of the home, to take care of kids, to take care of the relationship. That is labor that you don't get paid for, that you should be compensated for in the event of a divorce, because it could be very difficult in those situations to reenter the workforce, right? Why do you have this gap in your resume? It's totally unfair and it's totally antiquated, but this is where we are. That could be one reason. So that's alimony. Other division of assets, right? Something that comes up a lot is called a quadro, mm-hmm. which is a qualified domestic relations order, and it can entitle you to, I would say, a portion or half of the divorcing spouse's retirement assets. Again, because if you weren't working, you probably didn't have an opportunity to build up retirement assets in your name. So those are kind of some things to watch out for if you're going down the road of divorce. Get what you are owed.
And that's a tax-free event too. The quadro is a tax-free event. So if you get awarded half of your prior spouse's 401k, let's say, it's not going to be a taxable event to you in that year when that award happens. It'll follow the same rules when it comes to distribution in the future. But when you're awarded that money, it's not like a big tax hit, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And you know what? I feel like maybe we should also back up a second and talk about prenups, which I feel
that's true. Yeah.
That's like an icky word for a lot of people. Prenups. Did you ever sign one, Megan?
No, it was talked about a lot, though, amongst like my friends. I feel like all of my friends are financial planners or in the financial space. So we nerd out about this stuff. But no, Kelly and I did not do one. Is it advisable? Probably. I mean, it's just like the way I think about it, too. It's like insurance, right? I don't purchase life insurance because I expect to die. I hope I outlive my life insurance policy that I have, but I bought it just in case because I want to make sure things are taken care of. So that, in a way, could be how you see a prenuptial agreement. It's protection against just anything that's unknown. And it just spells out your wishes as a couple and individually in advance of anything getting negative, I guess you could say.
Yeah. And it can also provide for both parties in that agreement, right? So it's not just the spouse who has, or the partner who has, like more income or more assets. It can make sure that the other partner is provided for in the dissolution of their marriage. But it feels so icky because it feels icky because it's like, okay, are you saying that we're not going to like be together? You don't trust me. You think that you're going to go after my assets, but it could just be another way of saying like, I love you and I just want to like protect everyone.
Yeah. I mean, you can, again, equate it to insurance. If you just bought a really nice diamond engagement ring and you want to insure it, does that mean that your fiance is going to destroy the ring? No, it just means you want to protect it just in case. So,
Megan, since you mentioned insurance, maybe we should talk about life insurance.
Yeah, I think that's a good topic to lead into. So life insurance definitely has an impact on, or there becomes a need, I should say, when it comes to relationships, especially if there's dependence in the mix. Life insurance is also not a fun topic, kind of on the same lines of a prenup agreement. This isn't fun, like coffee table talk. But it can be definitely necessary to protect the, you know, not you necessarily because you're gone, but your spouse or your dependents in a couple different ways. It could protect them by paying off debts that you shared together or that you have on your own. It can protect the income that you would have been producing over your lifetime to make sure that your family can still live the same standard of living without you here. Is that how you see it too?
Yeah. And if there's any increased costs as a result of your death, right? Like maybe you did all the childcare, so now your spouse has to like hire a nanny. Or if they're so, you know, distraught by, you know, your untimely passing, they want to just say YOLO and quit their job for like 6 months and grieve and maybe scatter your ashes around the world or, you know, whatever the case may be. And so there's not like a set amount that you should buy. We have like a general rule of thumb, 5 to 10 times your income. And so you can kind of talk with someone, figure out what's appropriate, but that can be another way to protect the people you love.
Yeah, it's a great protection and peace of mind too. Hopefully you never have to think about it. Hopefully it's a waste of money, which is kind of weird to say, but hopefully it is, right? Hopefully you're paying for it and you're still here at the end of that term. That's the goal.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Like, hopefully it's a waste of money. Like, yeah, you have auto insurance, but hopefully you never get in a car accident. Hopefully your house never goes on fire.
So stay-at-home parents, I also think it's important to highlight that there is still a financial need for life insurance here, which sounds a little funny because there's not income producing from a stay-at-home parent. But just like you said, I want to highlight what you said earlier, Sam, about how a stay-at-home parent has a lot of responsibilities. They have maybe the caretaking for the children. What would happen if your spouse, your stay-at-home spouse, wasn't taking care of the children anymore? You would have to pay for daycare or for, you know, someone to come into the home and help take care of the kids. What about the other duties that they do that are unpaid, like paying the bills, doing the house cleaning, doing the errands that you never have to think about? Like those things, you know, they're not paid for those things necessarily, but they do, there's some kind of effort or work or mental burden put into those jobs that needs to be accounted for when it comes to thinking about life insurance. So there might not be as much of a need as maybe the income producer if there's a stay-at-home situation with a breadwinner in the couple, but there is still probably a need that you should address.
You know, I saw a really funny comic somewhere on the internet, and I wish I could remember where, but it was basically a stay-at-home parent who wanted to figure out like the value of their labor, like if they could turn it into a salary. And so they're like, okay, well, I'm a personal chef, I'm a housekeeper, I'm a teacher. And they started like adding all of these things up, and their salary ended up being, it was like $500,000 or something. Like when you put the value, the dollar amount of that work that they're doing, right? They're like, well, I'm the household financial person, you know, these things add up.
Absolutely. Well, good. So we talked about icky life insurance. What's next? Estate planning?
Let's talk about icky estate planning. All the things. It's like, I love you. And let's think about all the unpleasant things that could happen and plan for them so we don't have to think about it again. So estate planning. Megan, what is estate planning?
I think estate planning is kind of a fancy term, but it's really just to plan for things proactively. Again, we're going to use the same words, I think, over and over in this whole conversation today, but it's planning for the worst that can happen, right? It's planning for where your money goes or who takes care of your kids or takes care of you if you are not able to do so for whatever reason, for death, for, you know, medical situations, mental decline, things like that. I know you've got three basic docs that you say everyone should pretty much have, right?
Yeah. And it's a starting point because you can get more advanced, you know, from these three documents, but you should have your last will and testament, within which you can also specify guardianship provisions. So last will and testament, who gets my stuff if I go and who takes care of my kids if something happens to me. You don't even have to have kids to do your guardianship provisions. When I did these documents, I was like, well, I'm already paying someone. I may as well throw in some provisions for my future children. And if I want to change it later, I can. Second document is your advanced medical directive. I feel like everybody over the age of 18 needs one. I don't know how old you were, Megan, when this case, we're the same age, basically. So we were like, I don't know, preteens when this happened, but the Terry Schiavo case, I remember this as a kid and it like scared me and it stayed with me. And those of you may remember the case where this lady, she was in an accident or something. And so she was put on a feeding tube and life support. And this really long, dramatic legal battle ensued between her husband and her parents. And the battle was over what to do with her, right? To keep her on the support or to pull the plug and I guess let her die with dignity was how they probably would have phrased it. So parents wanted to keep her alive and her spouse said, no, she wouldn't have wanted this. There was no way to know what she would have wanted because she did not write it down. Ultimately, at the end of this legal case, the judge ruled in favor of her husband and she was removed from support. And later on, the story continued, and it turns out he was having an affair with her this whole time. And so you kind of start to, I mean, we're getting into like a little bit of conspiracy theories here, but it's scary to think about what the implications of that. Yeah, it would have been really helpful if, you know, her wishes were in writing. And this becomes even more important, I think, for people who are not married, but in committed long-term relationships, because if you don't have anything in writing, it is going to be left up to a judge. And depending on your state, maybe it'll be your parents who have to make a decision rather than the long-term partner, which might be what you want. That is the second of the three documents. And then the third document is your limited financial power of attorney. And this gives someone access, for example, to your accounts if they need to like make some kind of transaction and you're not able to do so. That's one way that the power of attorney can be used. But a lot of people don't know this. There is a way to do free estate planning. So while those three documents are important, one place that you can start, maybe that's easier and non-threatening, is going over the beneficiary designations on your accounts. So for example, if you open a 401k, you get to designate, you know, if something happens to you, who gets the 401k. And you're probably thinking, well, if I did my will, right, if I wrote it down, you know, I want everything to go to my spouse, do I really need to list the beneficiary? Yes. You at least need to list one and check it periodically, because let's say you open the account, maybe you listed mom and now you're married and you would like all of your accounts to go to spouse. Whoever you list as your beneficiary is going to override what's in your will. The will kind of picks up the rest, but, and that's a free tool, right? Because you can just log on to your accounts, do your beneficiary designation, move on with your life.
Yeah. A lot of people, I think, have that misconception that like, oh, well, it's in my will, or I wrote it down like in my file cabinet. That's not going to cut it. The beneficiary will trump the will no matter what you do. So, and if no one's elected, then it goes to your estate. And then the probate court has a decision on where that money goes. So do you want the court to decide where your assets go after you pass? Or do you want to make that decision proactively? And the answer is probably you want to make that decision proactively. So yeah, that's the easiest way to just get some estate planning done is really check all beneficiaries on all accounts. So checking savings, brokerage, investment accounts, retirement accounts, life insurance. Check your life insurance policies because that's important too. If your disability insurance has some kind of like lump sum payout upon death, sometimes they do. Make sure that's, you know, listed with the correct beneficiary. There's been plenty of times, plenty of like stories where somebody's ex-spouse was listed as the beneficiary and they were married to somebody new in the future and they pass away. And then that money rightfully goes to, you know, rightfully, unrightfully, whatever you want to say, goes to that old spouse because that's what the beneficiary election said. So check that out. That's some free estate planning right there.
Do that every few years, or if you move states, right? If you have like big life transitions, if you don't want mom and dad to be guardian anymore of your kids, you had a falling out, check it out. And a way that you can get a discount is during open enrollment, see if your job offers a legal plan that you can sign up for. And it's a little bit like insurance where you like have a network of, you know, attorneys that you can go through, but you can vet them. And that can be a way to get a discount or even some free estate planning, at least for those basic documents. You can get a little bit more fancy, and I won't go too technical with this, but you can also set up something called a trust if you want to avoid probate and keep the whole thing private. Or if you're like in a blended family situation, there's like a step parent or stepchildren involved. Those can be times where it makes sense to set up something called a trust. And so talk to an estate planning attorney to figure all of that out.
Yep. A will is public. It is public. So whatever you put in there, make sure you're okay with them being public. A trust is private. Yes. Beneficiaries are pretty much private. So
did you know, Megan, that in your will, you can even have a stipulation, like I've seen some parents do this for kids. If my kids decide to contest the will, I decide to leave them nothing instead.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Hmm. There's a term for it. I'm not an attorney. I don't remember what it's called, but that exists. So if you want to kind of prevent your kids from fighting over it, you can put some language in there for that.
Yeah. I mean, you can get as like technical with your language as you want. I have a friend who, she's an attorney, and she did her first year out of law school, like while she was waiting for her bar results, at a probate court, like reviewing wills and trusts and those types of documents all the time. So she was very specific with what she put into hers. They just had a baby. And even before her baby was born, she knew who was taking care of her dog, who was taking care of the child, where that child was going to go to school, like that type of thing. Like she really listed it out. So pretty cool. But then on the flip side, like my mom is a great example of like just getting basic documents done. Those three basic documents she got done for free through her employer's legal plan, which was pretty cool. So, you know, a law firm that was close by to her, they were able to prep those documents, customize them to how she wanted them. They were pretty basic, and she was all set. So those are something to not sleep on. I think the only downside to maybe a legal plan is they might be less, what's the right word? How do I say this nicely? They weren't as fast with response times, I'll say, but it's probably because they do get hit up by anybody who's in that plan for documents. So they might be a little busier than maybe another office that's not part of that employer plan. I'm not sure how those networks work with attorneys, but that was the only downside to maybe the legal plan my mom used, was just timing could have been a little better. They could have responded a little faster.
I actually had a really good experience with the one we used. I guess it just depends on the attorneys who are within the network, which maybe it's just like finding a physician within, if you're like in an HMO, like maybe you like one practice, one doctor over another, but it can be good, but you do want to kind of do your research. Like I went through the list. I wrote down maybe like five in my area and I looked them up and read reviews before I like decide who to go with. And I guess I picked right.
That's good. One thing to mention as well is like, these are a lot of different financial topics. So having a financial planner as like your plan's quarterback or your plan's like head coach, I guess you could say, can be super helpful because we've only listed like a couple things that are important to maybe address in your financial life. A financial planner, a certified financial planner, can really lay out everything that you specifically need to be looking at, just like we do in student loan consults. So in a student loan planner consult, there's a lot of different ways a student loan plan can go, right? There's not a cookie cutter plan, but we craft that plan for you specifically to really help you understand what your next steps are, what path you should be taking, what you should prioritize. So just like that, but a financial planner looks at everything. So that's maybe something to also add to your to-do list. If you're a couple who's looking at marriage soon, or you've been married, you're trying to get your ducks in a row here, maybe entertaining work with a financial planner could be super helpful as well for your financial well-being.
I think a lot of people think maybe erroneously to themselves, like, well, I know a lot about finance. Like, I don't need a financial planner. I can figure this out on my own. Well, guess what? I'm a certified financial planner and I have my own financial planner because I get personally super frustrated trying to explain these things to my husband, who really doesn't care, right? All he cares about is, can I go to my annual chess tournament, right? Can I just like spend the money and do that? Which is actually not very expensive. And the answer is yes. But I want him to be involved. I want him to know, like, what do we have? And like, let's create shared meaning and like plan for not just retirement things, but like special things like big trips or whatever. So yeah, we have our own planner who can help us navigate those conversations, even though I totally know what I'm talking about.
And it's like a third party that's in the room that is educated in finance. So even though you might be super educated, you might be a certified financial planner yourself, right? Like your situation, Sim, and like ours, you know, I'm in finance and financial planning, and I have a tax planner, and I will have a financial planner here soon too. It's just good to have a third party in the room to talk through these things. Also, I think for accountability purposes, but also like kind of helping with the dynamic between you and a partner, because even though you might have these money conversations, you guys might be on the same page, sometimes it's also helpful just to have somebody else maybe help explain something that you want to do or that you have questions about to your partner, and vice versa, like questions that they have or like maybe issues that they have, things that, you know, y'all just want to talk about with somebody else in the room to help communicate it better. I have a few clients like that where one of my first clients with Financial Coach Megan, she had come to me, she had done an introduction call with me to ask, you know, about my process, things like that. She was very knowledgeable already about her situation. She knew she was already in a tough spot with some of the debt that she had, and she wanted to really get right with moving forward. But she needed help with getting her husband involved. Like, that was the whole, really, I think the core of why she wanted to work with me is she just wanted somebody else to explain how important these things were. She didn't want to be the one who kept talking about how she wanted to get out of debt, how it would be best for them as a couple, how much money it was going to save, because it was coming from her. And, you know, yes, that's important. That's your spouse. You should also respect what your spouse thinks and feels. But it could also help if you have that other layer of someone else who's like, yeah, these things are important and it's doable. Let's do this. Let's X, Y, Z. Let's prioritize what we want to do here. And they're still clients today. I love working with them. And he's very, very much involved in the process now. And they're both on the same page. And they've accomplished a lot in the past like 5 years of us working together. So they're a really cool example that I like to think about when it comes to, you know, even if you are somewhat of an expert in these areas, like, it might still make sense to have somebody in your corner, somebody in y'all's corner as a couple to help you get to the next level.
Absolutely. I love a good success story. I love hearing that. And you probably have saved them, Megan, a lot of fights in their marriage, at least on this topic.
Yeah, I'd like to hope so. Let's see. Any last things we want to mention on student loans when it comes to debt with couples?
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about, you know, knowing ahead of time, right, what everybody owes. You can sort of think through like filing status. And so, I mean, this is kind of strange to say, but there may be some cases where you're like, well, I'm just going to like delay marriage. And I don't know that I've ever told someone to do that, but there could be cases where that makes sense sometimes, depending on how the numbers go. Honestly, though, I always like to tell people, let the decision to make a formal commitment be because that's what you choose to do, rather than like what your financial circumstances dictate. But you know, we're not blind to the financial realities too and how that plays into it. So with student loans, try to think through the impact of getting married and how you should file your taxes jointly or separately, how you guys can lower your adjusted gross income, right? If you live in a community property state, filing separately is a little different there. They take everything that everybody earned and they split it in half, which means what both people do to lower their AGIs impacts everyone. So that could be a time where you're very strategic and thinking about like, how much do we put away, you know, in our pre-tax retirement accounts, for example.
Yep. There's lots of planning that can be done around student loans with two spouses, with just one spouse having debt and with both spouses having debt. So I think that is a layer of complexity that gets added on, right, when we're doing student loan planning. We do have a lot of podcast episodes about filing taxes, married jointly or married separately. We actually had one a couple podcasts ago. So if you haven't checked that one out, make sure to take a listen. We have a lot of blog posts about this as well on our website at studentloanplanner.com. If you ever have questions about these types of things, kind of Google it. Use a little magnifying glass on our website. Use that keyword. I bet you we've got an article or 12 about it, whatever your question is. So that could be a really great resource. We have our free calculators on the website. And then if you really just want that guidance or that one-on-one help, we're here for you. You are not alone in this student loan debt journey. We are here to help make sure that you've got the most efficient plan. You're aware of what that plan is going to look like long-term, how it will affect you and your relationship and, you know, from the financial side of things. So definitely lean on us if you need some one-on-one help. We are here.
We are here for you. Megan, I think that's a great place to end. So what I want to leave everyone with today is Dr. John Gottman's second principle of marriage, which is nurture your fondness and admiration. Nurture your relationships. Think about what you like about your spouse. Take a little stroll down memory lane. Remember those early days when maybe things are not looking so great right now. Remember what you really appreciate about this person. And remember that divorce is expensive. So choose wisely.
And talk to people who can help if you need it. We're happy to help on the student loan side, financial planning side if needed. But thanks for hanging out with us today. I hope this will be after Valentine's Day. I hope you had a lovely Valentine's Day, and we'll catch you on the next one.